Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And also for everyone who wants to know the story behind a song. You know, whenever I do this, I play Haley Woolbright's song, Boxcar, because I fell in love with it about 2 years ago when I first heard it. And I play it quite often. When I do and I cut it off, I get complaints. I cannot believe how serious you people are. So we're going to play the entire Boxcar while I'm waiting for my first guest.
Stowed away on this boxcar for quite some time. We plan to ride it all the way from Maine to Anaheim. But things change and people do too. My company's gone.
You know, I've been thinking so much about movies lately, and how often do we ever have a really good song in a movie anymore? I haven't seen a movie that has a really great song in it. Maybe somebody will pick this up and put it in a movie, because that would be fun. Okay, I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, and he was here not too long ago, but we had a little problem, and so I'm happy to have Noel A. Obiora back on Joy on Paper, And Noel, thank you for joining me. I'm sorry that last time we had a little bit of problem with the sound. So thank you for joining me again.
Sure, thanks for having me back. I hope it goes well this time.
Oh, it sounds great. Now we can hear every word. Last time it was a little spotty. You know, that happens with cell phones, and it depends on the location. But anyway, now we hear you perfectly. So let's talk about this book. When I talked to you before, I said to you how much I enjoyed it. It's called A Past That Breathes. And it is a courtroom drama, a story about two attorneys, and it's just, I always love courtroom dramas anyway, but I think you've done a particularly wonderful job with this book. So tell us about the main characters and the idea behind the book.
Thank you. The main characters are Kenneth Brown, an African-American defense attorney, and Amy Wilson, a young lawyer starting off with the DA's office. They both get this case. They're about 3-4 years into their careers as criminal attorneys. And they both get this case that is very racially divisive and intense in an environment that also was politically tense, which was during the O.J. Simpson trial. And it was a case where a young woman in West Los Angeles died, and her ex-boyfriend, an African-American, was arrested for the murder. And so they both are trying this case, but also they were in college together and were just about to start developing a relationship when the case landed on their laps. So the case becomes a microcosm of race in America, sort of, at the time they were both in L.A. Practicing law, and also of all the issues that were going on in that time period in Los Angeles. So just as the case was playing out in the courtroom and in their job, it was also playing out in their attempt to get to know each other. I really wanted to bring out a different aspect of legal drama, which is that sometimes the people handling the cases are not the perfect people to carry the case. A lot of legal dramas have very experienced lawyers who know what they're doing, and these two young lawyers have to not only find themselves but also learn their own trade in the course of handling this case.
Well, I think you've written a great book. I was so impressed with both the style that you took and with the descriptions that you really, you created a scene for us that we could imagine in our head, and I really enjoyed that. And you're also excellent at writing dialogue.
Thank you so much. Thanks. I actually started off wanting to be a playwright, and I got my MA in drama from King's College and Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. So I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, I guess that's why you have the right ear for it. You have, sometimes authors will really struggle to get dialogue that sounds realistic, and it's not easy. And you've done a wonderful job with this.
Thank you.
So your background is that you want to be a playwright, and tell us how you landed up in your part in it of being a lawyer in Los Angeles yourself.
Sure. I came to the United States primarily to go to college and ended up staying. And part of that was that I had to keep going to school to maintain my student visa. So my dad was a lawyer, and I thought at the time that law would be a really interesting profession. I mean, I liked the idea of practicing law, but I have always wanted to be a writer first. So I went ahead and went to law school at the University of Texas, and then continued to LA in the hope that I would find the real trade I was looking for, which was writing dramatic pieces here. And but law just took over, and part of what the young lawyer struggled with was everything I struggled with trying to run a practice in Los Angeles. And I also found that it exposed me or brought me in contact with the characters that would fill a writing life going forward. I mean, really interesting characters that run the spectrum of life, you know, so to speak. So I, you know, it became, you know, so it became really good for me, I think, and it just took a long time coming around to writing this book and pursuing my real dream of being a writer.
Well, I think it's fantastic. You know, this is there are so many lawyers who become writers, and of course, actually studying law is a good basis for becoming a writer because you do have to learn how to think clearly, how to write clearly, and so it's a good background, and it kept you here. So that's the important thing.
Thanks.
So you know, of course, when you started writing and. How did the novel get away from you? Did you write a lot? I understand that there were you got how many words did you write?
You know, I started off. One of the biggest influences on writing this book was Bleak House, and I started off really trying to write a novel that was not just about the courtroom, but the novel that reflected the influences that. Class, cultural issues, and resources have on the practice of law. How well you do if you can afford an attorney, and how poorly you're going to do if you can't afford an attorney. So that was really my influence. So I started off writing and ended up with about 1,500 pages. That's when the editors told me that I'd be crazy if I thought anybody was going to publish this as a first novel. And that's when I began to pare it down. But I did enjoy. I think for a writer, you have to first enjoy the work. So I did enjoy, you know, writing all those pieces and trying to, you know, develop these characters, give these characters a fuller life outside of the courtroom before they ended up in the courtroom. The structure was always going to be the same. You know, the second part was going to be the full trial that solved the murder mystery. And the first part was going to be drawing you into the lives that are affected by this murder and the search for who committed the murder. I thought that was really... a part of litigation that doesn't always show up in legal drama, because as a young lawyer, I found that if I woke up on the wrong side of the bed, I carried it with me into my work, and oftentimes the responsibility that I have in my work is just such that waking up on the wrong side of the bed, it doesn't matter. You just have to go in and do it. But that's life, and so I wanted to point that out, because if you got a young lawyer who's not experienced and doesn't know how to deal with those situations in life and how he carries it into his work, you're going to have critical problems happening in the trial itself. And that was some of the things I was playing with, trying to show in the book. But it did turn out to be a lot of words, and I'm so glad I managed to pare it down.
Well, of course. But it's a learning experience, and you learn from every word you write, you learn. And you learn when you have to get to that point where you start editing, you also learn. But it definitely gave you a lot of material to work with, a lot of depth. Certainly, you know, Charles Dickens could get away with it. You know, they'd print anything he wrote, and I still think Bleak House is his best. You know, it's not read as much because it's long, but I think it's his best work. So I just thought I was very impressed. I was impressed exactly with this, the way you set things up, and this whole idea of, you know, I've dealt with a lot of lawyers over the years, and. Oh, boy. Sometimes they frustrated me. And it's funny that you say that about if they wake up on the wrong side of the bed. I was involved in a lawsuit one time where the lawyer always was waking up on the wrong side of the bed, and I had to, you know, get him straightened out mentally. And right. So I found that part of the book really, I enjoyed it. And I've read, you know, so many courtroom dramas, but I got into yours so much more easily than I have in many courtroom dramas. It flows beautifully. There are twists and turns so that we don't know, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. And that makes it also an exciting adventure as a reader.
Thank you. Yeah, I was struck by how much Bleak House stayed relevant to the issues of, lawyers, you know, and how they approach their cases, how you approach something that is so critical to one's life as a business. And doctors tend to say your bedside manners, and you can talk about that in terms of your bedside manners but we don't have that concept of how you really develop and build that compassionate aspect of your practice, even though it is also a business. It's often hard to draw the line where one stops and the other begins, or try to mesh them together in a way that is that the client, you know, trusts and feels taken care of, especially when you're in the lower rung of the practice where you're frustrated by not even having the resources to fight the case in the first place, but you still have a responsibility to someone who's going through probably what is one of the worst moments of their life, and that struggle and conflict, and how it plays out sometimes in a situation where the young lawyer is saying, why me? Why do I have to be the one who gets this case instead of Google versus Facebook? But you still have to do it. I really wanted, Bleak House was really, I remember reading that book again while I was a young lawyer practicing and just thinking, you know, yeah, this is, it's interesting that this is quite relevant after so many years.
It certainly is. And I think that you've done a great job with this book. I'm very, very happy that we were able to get you back, because A Past That Breathes is an excellent book from many aspects. The commentary on society, on race, and all of that. But the most important is always you need great characters, and that's what you've gotten here and you're writing about. And it's a very enjoyable book. Now, of course, I know you're writing. You're writing your next book, right?
Right, I am, yeah.
Okay. Of course, this time you won't quite write quite so many pages, so it'll be a little bit easier to edit.
Experience, yes.
Yes. But how are you finding the promotion side of it? Because that's difficult, and there's a lot of work involved in that, too.
Yes, and also it's something that a first-time writer, at least I, wasn't prepared for. You know, I used to think that, you know, you write the book and you send the book out there to, you know, and then you sort of, you know, sort of...
sit back?
And it's more like you write the book and you put yourself out there, and if people really like you or understand you, then they look at the book. So I wasn't prepared for how this would thrust me into the public sphere as much as it did. I thought the book would be mostly doing it for itself. So it's a learning experience, and I'm getting used to it.
Well, it's part of the what you have to do, and I think what's nice about you is that you have this enthusiasm. We can hear it in your voice. You obviously had fun writing the book, and the reader will have fun reading it. So, you know, it's a serious story. It's a crime, but when we get down to it, we always want a good read. And I think you've given it to people with this book, and I'm sure with the next ones. Now, do you have a Facebook page?
I do. A Past That Breathes has a Facebook page. You get by that name. And I also have a Facebook page of my own. And we're also on Instagram and Twitter.
Okay, so it's Noel Obiora OBIORA, and you can check it out on the internet. At the book, The Past That Breathes, is available online wherever books are sold, and hopefully in bookstores if they're open again. But I want to thank you so much. Today the sound quality was excellent, and it was just a joy to talk to you and to help you promote this book, because I think that people really need to have these kind of books that you can talk about problems in society, you can talk about race, but when you put it in perspective of a well-written book, it really can and does make an impact. Just as Charles Dickens made an impact, an author like you talking about an important subject can also make an impact. So I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper, Noel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to the next book. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. We'll do a commercial, and then I've got a really wonderful guest coming up, Robert Bathurst, all the way from England. My goodness, this is an exciting day. Bye-bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back with my next guest all the way from England. This is exciting. And, of course, I know that all of my listeners already love him because I had so many great emails following his last time he was here. So I'm happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Robert Bathurst. Hi, Robert. He's going to not quite here. He's going to be here in a minute. Well, we're waiting. It's England. It's far away. Is he here? No? I thought he was on the phone. Oh, well, he's going to be on the phone. I know he's going to be on the phone. But anyway, meanwhile, I will keep talking.
Hello? Yes?
Are you there, Robert?
I'm here, yes. Hello.
Okay, well, now we can hear you. I couldn't hear you. Okay.
Sorry, I knocked it off. I went on mute for a second.
Okay, are you there? Are you here?
I'm all with you, yeah.
Okay. Well, I am so happy to welcome you back because you are back now this time to talk to another of Louise Penny's books. And, last time you were on, I had so many nice comments about you because my listeners love when I have somebody from England on. So it's great to welcome you back. Let's talk today about the new book is called The Madness of Crowds. And of course, this is your which book? Eighth of the Louise Penny or nine?
This is the seventh. But there are 17 books. Ralph Cosham was the original reader, and he's died, and he'd read 10 of the books, and so I picked up series was given a nod for that. And this is the seventh of the 17 that I've read.
Well, I think that, as I said, my listeners loved when you were on before and we were talking about England in general, but also, of course, about the wonderful character that Louise Penny has developed, Armand Gamache. And she is so popular. Her books are so popular. As you said, there's 17 of them now. And tell us about this one. The new book is, well, I suppose it's a post-COVID. Well, I don't know if we're post-COVID, but it's a very relevant book for today's time.
Indeed it is. And it starts post-COVID, as you say. It starts slightly into the future. I hope not too long in the future, please. And at a time when we're free from the paralysis that has overtaken us in response to the virus, and all the it acknowledges how when people are addressing it and addressing their fears and addressing how we should adopt behave in response to it, the standard of debate is such that nobody debates anymore; they just shout, and so it's. The public debate has reached a sort of febrile quality to it, and so it reaches the point, starts at a point when we are in that state, and we are listening to somebody whose arguments the audience love, but Armand Gamache finds abhorrent, and so he has a sort of professional and personal tension between whether he protects her in the way that he's been detailed to do, and put his life in danger, or whether he holds back, and rather like a doctor with somebody who's on the operating table, do you do a worse job because you disagree with the patient, or do you just do your job? And of course he does his job, and he does put himself in great danger. But it emerges from the state that we're in, which is perhaps not a healthy one in terms of debate and the way people express themselves.
Well, in this book, of course, Armand Gamache is put into a estranged position because we don't normally expect him to more or less be acting as a bodyguard for someone. And yet that's essentially what he's asked to do, to watch out and to protect a speaker who is quite controversial.
Indeed, I think that is a professional dilemma that a lot of people face. I mean, you could say that lawyers might represent people who they find distasteful, but of course they do their job, which is to act in their interests and to examine the evidence and to test the evidence. They themselves are irrelevant in some ways. Their own personal reaction is not relevant to their actual professional, the exercise of their work. So yes, he finds himself in a very similar position.
Well, of course, normally most of the books, concentrate sort of on this Quebec village that Louise Penny has created, Three Pines. And, you know, it's they're sort of very lovely, lovely place. And here, in this case, now we're sort of really thrown into the chaos that has been created here by COVID and the sort of the dynamics of how people are acting and reacting to the situation.
Yes, and we've all got our view on how things are. I mean, we're all suddenly in the last 18 months, we're all amateur epidemiologists, and we're all behavioral scientists, and we're all experts in the field, and we all feel free to have an opinion and to express it, but the real problem is that if you disagree with someone that in the old, well before it seemed you could disagree with people on certain levels and still be friends. It just really worries me that the tribal nature of debate and discourse that's going on at the moment, and to some extent the madness of crowds reflects that.
Well, it reflects so many things about our society at this time. It is strange, you know. I was just watching this weekend. You know, I mentioned to you last time that I'm a big soccer fan. I never miss a game where Harry Kane is playing, and it was so wonderful to see people back. It was the difference between watching a soccer game with this canned laughter, canned enthusiasm, yeah. Then this weekend, to see the difference, It was beautiful.
You know, they didn't do canned swearing whilst we were in the crowd, I noticed. There was, didn't do any of that. But, yeah, I mean, I went to the theatre the other day, and it was, we can do that to some extent here. Yeah. And it was, yeah, it was just like before. So there's a certain level of opening up going on, and let's hope long may that continue.
Well, let's hope so, because we need it. It's, and I think for people, when they're reading this book, they're going to say, you know, they're going to look at the basically what Louise here is trying to say, that, wow, we have to think about what people are saying and how they say it. And I was particularly, you know, interested in seeing this sort of aspect of Armand, sort of how he related to the situation.
Yes, he has to, and she has. In addition to the sort of the personal politics of it all, there is under it another sort of rattling good yarn that Louise has created. It is another really suspenseful mystery thriller, which is of course riven with the debate. But at root, it is a sort of a masterful piece of construction and characterization.
Oh, it always is. With her, her mysteries are always so good. They have depth, and there are all these twists and turns that we always look forward to. So for you, it's wonderful that you've been able to do these books, and I know you're doing many other books. And I have to mention to everybody that you, you won the Audie Award in 2020?
Yes, I did. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Didn't you?
Yes. Well, you know, best male.
Yes, I did. I was really thrilled to get that.
Well, you know, to be the best male narrator in 2020 is pretty good. You know, of course, you'd been nominated before. You know, there's some, you know, big time competition. You know, because some of you Brits really have wonderful voices, and you know, you're out there, and but I definitely, this was well deserved, because I can listen to you, and I do listen to you for hours, and it's just so enjoyable. It's really, isn't it wonderful, really, to be an actor? It's wonderful to be an actor, and you carry your talent around with you.
Well, thank you, and it is a very strange relationship between the audiobook reader and the person listening to it, because you are in the middle. You're between the person receiving the story and the person who's created it, who's written it, and whereas if you're reading a book in print form, there's nobody in the way. Whereas with audiobooks, there is this person in the way, and the main job of the audio reader is sort of not to be annoying, you know, not to put them off, and not to make yourself to you know, not for it to be about the mellifluous voice and everything. It's just to make sense of it and draw the characters and chew on every, you know, squeeze the language and land it and engage with the listener. And it's when you have finished listening to an audiobook, you do feel a really strange connection with that reader who's taken you on the journey that's created by the author.
It does. And what I find interesting about listening to Audible books, and I came late to it because I wasn't, you know, I'm sort of a purist, and I thought, well, I have to read books. So I came late to reading, to listening to Audible books, and it was another Brit who really changed my whole attitude, and that was Nicholas Guy Smith, which is very funny. You both have the middle name of Guy, and you are both the top narrators, as far as I'm concerned.
Ah, wonderful. Well, yes, a couple of guys. And, so yes, we can. I'm really glad you get engaged by it, and it's a wonderful thing when that does happen, and you're able to swing along with the story, and you find that exciting, and someone you sort of look forward to switching on and hearing the next installment.
Well, you know, it's funny, when I mentioned at the beginning that my listeners really respond to narrators. Now, I'm not going to have you narrate today, but I did have Nicholas Guy Smith on, and he did a whole half hour of just narrating A Gentleman in Moscow, because I wanted to introduce people to, you know, again, many people who had not listened to Audible books. They said, well, you have to listen to this, and your whole attitude will change. And so that's why I now have so many listeners who just love Audible books.
Yes, and it works with people who like reading and people who find reading difficult. And so they can work in tandem. I mean, there are ways of sometimes reading a book and then slipping into the Audible version as well when you say you're in the car and you want to hear the next bit but you haven't got time to read it. But yes, you just hope that the listener can be engaged by it in the way that the author intended.
Well, you know, having books read to us is something that happens to us at a very young age. I still remember my mother reading to me, and I mean, the hours and hours of pure joy of listening to her reading. And so that comes, I think that relationship builds up with when you're listening to a narrator.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it's an absolute fact that people who have been read to, them find, you know, being their imagination being piqued by literature, it does count for a lot. And people discover books and they sink themselves into it. And people's lifestyles are different, and some people have company to go on a walk with, and some people don't. And some people like to just be on their own, and to be, or they're in their gardening. They just take a story with them, and it's really strange how sometimes you hear something you've been listening to, and you can remember exactly where you were when you were listening to it. It's just so vivid, and you could say, "Gosh, I was pruning that rose, or I was walking there, or I was at the top of that mountain," and so you can be in a place, but also completely sunk in your imagination at the same time.
Well, your daughters were very lucky when you read them bedtime stories. They had your voice to listen to.
Yeah, I always enjoyed reading them. I played a character in Cold Feet who had a child, and he would read them to sleep, reading his company reports.
Yes.
Working at the same time.
I remember that. that's wonderful. That was a wonderful part for you. You know, it's so funny.
Thank the child. Bye, Baby Bunting. Daddy's Management Consulting. I can remember that.
You know, this is the wonderful thing about when I have people on, and I have my listeners who really, they become interested in a book so often because of hearing from the author, which I would love if Louise Penny would ever come on. I've been trying. Or the narrator now, because there's a personal connection that builds up. And one of the things, it's so funny, so many of my listeners think, you know, when I have a narrator on like you, somebody famous and an actor, that we're going to get some gossip, you know, some inside look at actors or the perhaps the theater or the movie industry. So tell me, you know, just, of course, I know that they auditioned you for James Bond, which you didn't get, which probably was a good idea, although you'd be very rich. But you know, you've worked with some really, really important people, and you're important, but you work with some more famous people too.
Yeah, they say you should never work with your heroes, don't they? They always see themselves as having feet of clay. But I've worked with a lot of people. But I mean, essentially, all actors they're turns. You know, they're people doing a turn. And however exalted they are in their career, in whatever state they are, they're always, you know, they're only as good as what they're doing currently. There's a sort of pressure on people in different ways, but you know, to work with people who are well known, by and large, that their sort of success and the way they regard themselves counts for nothing when you're just doing the part.
Well, I'm so happy that we have streaming nowadays, because I you know, I mentioned last time that I moved to England when I was 21 years old and bought a house there, a cottage, and so I was sort of really, you know, just mad myself about being in England and crazy about everything at that time. And so, as I said, even today I watch soccer instead of American football.
But you're on Tottenham, though.
Oh, Tottenham, of course. I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
If Harry Kane gets his way.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I have so much Tottenham memorabilia. I have one of those 25-foot scarves, Tottenham scarf. My sister has one, and she wraps it around her during a game. So what are we going to do? I love Tottenham.
Then you're just going to have to shift your allegiance, your deep love for Harry, into Dele Alli or some other.
Oh, it doesn't have quite the same. Tottenham just sounds so nice, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Indeed. No. The Tottenham has a great spirit to it. A lot of clubs have lost their spirit, and Tottenham has retained it, and it's one of the ones that has. But.
I think it has. So far, I enjoy it. What's your team?
Brighton.
Oh, Brighton.
And Hove Albion.
Okay. Well, then next time I'm watching a game, and I'll watch for Brighton and think about you.
Yes, please do. Follow Brighton. You can't go wrong.
And I've been enjoying so many wonderful shows from England. Tell me, do you know Sir Ben Kingsley? Do you know Ben Kingsley?
I don't know him. No, I obviously know who he is. And have you had him on your show yet?
No, but I'm trying, and I want Joanna Lumley too. I love Joanna Lumley.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah, keep trying, and you'll get them. You'll get them.
Yeah, because.
But yes, no, they turn up. Joanna Lumley does all sorts of documentaries as well as and all sorts of other things.
Well, of course, so she did.
Sure
she did.
You'll want to tell.
And she did the wonderful one about India, where she was born, and you know that was absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
Of course. What about you? You were born someplace interesting. Tell people about that.
I was born in West Africa. It was a British colony at the time, and it was called the Gold Coast. It became Ghana 10 days after I was born, and my father was out there, and he'd been fighting in the war in Burma during the war, and he spent about 20 years trying to get back to the UK. And he got a series of jobs in Africa and Ireland, and eventually came back to the UK when I was about 10. So I'd never been to the country until I was about 10. And I don't have any memory of West Africa. So I was left when I was 2. But Ireland is what I remember. I grew up in Ireland.
Oh, can you talk with an Irish accent? I think Irish accents are so wonderful.
It is, and there's all sorts of different ones as well. It's the Cork one is my favourite, and if you go online and just listen to the Cork accent, it's really wonderful. But yes, it's the Cork is a particular and very difficult to do unless you're from Cork, but it's a very particular one, and Start with that one and work north.
Well, I always thought, most Americans always think of French accents as being sexy, and I always thought either the British or the Irish accent were much better. Somehow they appealed to me better.
You won't be the first person to have fallen for an Irishman, I tell you.
That's true. That's just something about that voice, you know. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Now, as a matter of fact, you should do some of these Joanna Lumley style travelogues and go around to all. Yeah, you follow your father's travels.
Maybe I could. That's a really good idea. I shall take that to and parley it up into a proposal. That's a really good idea.
No, really, you should, because as I said, I enjoyed this Joanna Lumley. She went back to where she was born in India, and she left when she was a wee baby, but she had this wonderful, long travelogue, 3 episodes, and it's fantastic. And it really brings the area to life, and I'm. Bet with all of the places that your father, you sort of follow in his footsteps and see where he lived, and I think it would be fantastic.
With those documentaries, you really want time, because you want to come across coincidences that are real coincidences and what haven't just been set up by some researcher. And sometimes these documentaries, they have so little time to do them that they they almost write them before they go out there and try and make the discoveries. So it sounds as though she was, she had a bit of time and could come across people and run with it.
Well, she did, and she took the time and made it fascinating for the, you know, for the watch, the viewer. It's a fascinating look at the country as you would rarely see it. And I think that you, with your fascinating background, of course, you have a very impressive background. And it would be absolutely fantastic for you to do something like that.
Right. Well, I shall ring my agent immediately once we're off the phone.
Well, do that. You do that, and then you tell them that's what my listeners want. My listeners want more of you and to hear more about your story.
You played a character called Patsy as well, didn't you?
Well, I think you've done a wonderful job with the new narration of the newest book of Louise Penny, and it's called The Madness of Crowds. And I kept in my head thinking of the Thomas Hardy, The Maddening. Once you get that idea of the maddening crowd in your head, it's hard to get that word out, maddening.
Far from the maddening crowd, yes, indeed.
The maddening, yes.
Yes, so the madness of crowds, it's a good summary from a situation that we all find ourselves in. And everyone's got a different opinion, and the most important thing is we just don't conduct our debates through a megaphone.
Well, it has been an honor, really, to talk to you as the best male narrator in 2020. And that says it all, because you really are. And I'm really thrilled. I hope that I see that you do get together. You've gotten together with Louise Penny, right? Occasionally?
Yes, and I'm going online on Sunday week to do one of her question and answer sessions. So we'll be linking up then, and I look forward to seeing her and talking and having a conversation with her.
Well, I think that you've done a wonderful job taking on this character. I enjoy it so much, and I've read, you know, I've of course read the books, but I think I've listened to all of your narrations, certainly, and I've listened to them like not once but twice, because I get something. There's always a depth to the way that you narrate the story. As you're there is something wonderful in your voice, and it comes across in these books, and I just really enjoy it. So
thank you, Patsy. I'm very, very, very grateful to hear that. And of course, you're dealing with some really good material and some really good characters and great construction. But I'm really glad that the readings engaged you. I'm delighted to hear that.
And I hope that, you know, get onto that agent and tell him I want to see a documentary about your family in general. You have a very fascinating history. Your family has a fascinating history. And have you written your autobiography yet?
Have I written my autobiography? I don't know what I'd call it. The names of actors' autobiographies are always strange. And they always betray some level of self-delusion about them. Autobiographies generally are rather, I think political autobiographies, I think the subtext of every political autobiography should, the subtitle should be, I was right all along. Is that probably about what the politicians write? Actors are mostly, and I got the job, is probably what the actors say at the end of their disaster stories, but they always seem to come out on top. Yes, my autobiography is still, as yet, unwritten. It's still unconstructed and unthought about, but you've inspired me to think about it.
Well, you should. And, you know, when you have such a fascinating family, and your father was fascinating, your parents, all of your relatives were fascinating, you've got a story, heck of a story here. Get busy. Start writing.
Will do.
Okay, that's what I always encourage people.
I always obey you.
When I have, you know, I start the show off, you know, that this is a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I'm sure that over the years you thought once in a while, well, there's a book in me. And it's about time you write your own story.
Very good. I will. I shall obey.
Okay, and your daughters will love it.
That's it.
You already have, you know, you have your daughters who will just love if you do that.
Thank you. I'll take your advice.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Oh, wait. I need a web page. A web page. What web page do you want to send people to?
Looking up The Madness of Crowds, and it's on Macmillan Audio. It's being released today. Louise Penny's latest, 17th of the Inspector Gamache series. That's the link to the book. And I have a Twitter handle at Robert Battis, but I use that for whimsy. I can post the occasional professional thing on it, but it's just things that take my fancy rather than any great proselytizing.
Okay, well, and people can look forward to this event that you're going to be, and I'm sure they can look at Louise Penny's website and find out the events.
Yes, if you go to Louise Penny on Facebook, she's got details of all her publicity tour. She's doing one tonight, and she's doing several over the next few days, and I'm doing the one on Sunday. So yeah, Louise Penny on Facebook is probably where to go.
Okay, that's the best, because everybody will just really enjoy seeing the two of you hearing the two of you together, yeah, and seeing you. And again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you.
Thanks very much, Patsy.
Okay, bye bye now. Wow. Wow, what a guy. He is such, you can get really, you know, I just love these guys. And it's always so much fun for me to talk to somebody from England and to be reminded of those years. And it's been really fun. And also about Quebec, Louise Penny, of course, her books are set in Quebec, where I spent a lot of time. Used to go to Blue Lake in Quebec, and the trout fishing was the best. Oh boy, every morning, trout in the morning, trout at lunch, trout at dinner, and I never got tired of it. And that was in Quebec. Wow, what a place. Anyway, well, what can I say? Remember what I always tell you. Okay, I hope you remember what I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, or perhaps an audible book, boy, oh boy, narrated by Robert Bathurst. Wow, can you imagine that? Or you might land up with a series really on the Hallmark Channel, like I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries. She's written 11 of them. Whoa, we're heading towards a dozen, and it's going to be fantastic when she gets a series. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. I'm running out of time. I know it, and I have to get out of here. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. He saluted me, and I saluted him. Bye-bye now.